Hello and welcome to episode 101. 101. 101, 101, whatever. Welcome to episode 101 of the Blue Cup Duels podcast. I'm Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav. And with me, as always...
Hello, I'm Ben Chandler, also known as Ben304. Do you know, 101 is the vault you leave Fallout 3 to find your father?
That's true. It's also the number of Dalmatians in the Disney
movie. I was just going to say that next. That's how many... We've done it. We've done more than 100. Well, when we finish this, we'll have done more than 100 episodes.
That's
You'll
correct.
Have to forgive me. I'm a little stuffy and a little coffee.
It's okay.
I'm a little.
You're a little coffee? You seem more like a little tea to me.
I am sipping a nice mug of tea. It's a big mug. I've got a big mug.
You do?
For my tea.
My mom once had a giant mug for coffee that was like an exaggerated size joke mug, and it said something like, fill her up on the side or something really stupid.
Oh. I knew someone that...
Or, no, it said born to be wired. Sorry.
I knew someone that had a very big joke mug that said, I'm the biggest mug around, that I thought was funny.
Oh, joke mugs.
But I think, yeah, joke mugs are such a delightful thing because everybody needs mugs.
It's true. They do.
Well, I guess not everybody, but, you know, they're such a handy thing. And you can give the gift of a mug, and people are like, oh, thanks, another mug. And they've got like 50 already.
I've only got two mugs, personally. But
I have three mugs.
Okay.
My big mug, one that my grandmother gave to me that she won in like a hamper of various things, and it had this mug in it. And one that's a GDI mug.
Oh, GDI?
Which is Global Defense Initiative, which is from Command and Conquer, the Westwood real-time strategy game.
I see. My mug...
A game I loved as a boy and still do today.
Clearly.
If you still have a brief history of time by Ben Chandler.
Indeed. I have a mug from Late Night with Conan O'Brien, which I bought here in New York many years ago when I came on a visit and went to go see the show. And
is it the same sort of mug as he uses on the show?
Yeah, well, the one he used to use on the show, yes. It's blue,
before
and it's
Jay
got
Leno
the,
did the wrong thing.
Yeah, and he got his cable show now. But yeah, it's blue and it's got the moon on it with the little stars, and it says Late Night with Conan O'Brien on it. And I also have a mug, a really cheesy tourist mug from Puerto Rico that has a skull and crossbones on it, and it says "Dead Men Tell No Tales." Something pirate society or something. So, yeah. I used to have, when I was a kid, I used to have this really cool mug, one of those ones that changes based on the temperature.
I always liked those.
Yeah, mine was of Pangaea, and it normally showed like the map of the world, and then when you would put hot liquids into it, it would change into Pangaea. So,
nice.
That was pretty cool. Anyway.
That's cool. I always like seeing what creative things people can do with those. Because mostly it's like, you know, a man with no shirt. Or a man with a shirt and suddenly, oh, he's got no shirt and, you know, stuff like
that.
Yeah,
those are silly.
Well, I mean, it's hot. Get it?
I think we should move on. Mug talk aside.
My grandparents used to have one that was like a barbecue. And when you'd fill the mug up, like little like smoke and stuff would appear over the barbecue.
Oh,
I always
cool.
liked that.
That's cool.
My grandparents never had any of the shirtless men ones. I'm not sure why, but you know.
It's probably a good thing. Actually, speaking of which, my grandmother had a mug, which now my mother has, which she inherited from her, which I always enjoyed because my grandmother...
It's an heirloom.
It's an heirloom, yes. It's just black and it says, life's a bitch and then you die. It was always enjoyable to see my grandmother
fitting.
Drink out of that. Anyway... Moving on, how are you, Ben, aside from sick?
I'm unwell.
Yeah, clearly. What happened?
I don't know. Like, I've sort of gone for 2 years without really getting sick, and now I've been sick twice in... It's because I've been traveling around and, like, seeing lots of people, so,
people.
You catch whatever germs have got. Yeah, gross.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, you traveled around. You went to Melbourne. How was that?
Melbourne was good. It was, you know... I went there with purpose, so I was kind of pretty busy because I was working at the same time. So, you know, the hours I wasn't working, I was usually out eating food with various people or visiting people in their homes, seeing the art galleries. But I also got to see Stephen Wilson and his band in concert, which was really good. I had looked forward to that.
Good.
Yeah, so that was good. And then
and you
I spent
had
some
the,
time in Perth.
Yeah, you had the distinction of going like the very week before the big games week in Melbourne. You left like the day of.
That happened last time I went to Melbourne.
Really?
With you. They had like a big week of games.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember.
Week we were leaving.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
That's just the thing with me in Melbourne.
I guess so.
I guess. Although that didn't happen the first time I went, so, you know.
Okay.
Two out of three ain't bad.
Well, wait, did you actually stay for the games thing, or there was there just no games things happening the first time? Or the last time?
No, the first time there wasn't any games things happening.
Oh, okay.
I went to, there might have been. The first time I went to Melbourne was 6 years ago.
Wait, you've only been to Melbourne three times?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I thought for some reason you had been more.
No.
Oh, well. Okay. Third time's the charm.
I'm sorry if I misled you.
You didn't mislead me. I just was... I don't know why I thought that. Anyway.
What about you? How have you been going?
I've been all right. Not to be topical, but as you can probably guess, there's been some big shakeups in the world in the past week. And, I think a lot of people are feeling bummed out. So we're going to do our best on this podcast to bring some levity and grace into the consciousness of our listeners. That was a bunch of bullshit I just said.
I genuinely like being miserable. Can you tell? You've done 100 movies with me. You must know by now that that's my favorite sense of humor is just being dejected.
Good. Let's just wallow around in our misery. But aside from that,
I'm so privileged that being miserable is like a hobby of mine. Like, I got nothing to actually be miserable about. So for me, it's just a pastime.
Right. Fair enough. Anyway, I've been good. I've been, kind of in a funk the past week, so I haven't gotten a whole lot of work done, but little by little, I'm kind of like coming around and doing that. And, I've been kind of showing my game around at stuff. There was a Halloween expo a couple of weeks ago that was fun that I showed at, and I'm showing it at Gamer X East this weekend. So, there's that. And,
I have a Halloween story to tell because I'm very new to Halloween.
Yes.
It's not a thing, but the people I was staying with in Perth, I helped carve a pumpkin.
Right. You were like, you were still away on Halloween.
Yeah, but they do trick or treat, right? But not many people come to their door because it's not a very big thing. I've never done.
Yeah, I saw a picture of them in costume, and I figured you probably took the picture.
I did take a picture because there's only three of them, and there's no fourth person to take a picture.
I could also tell from the angle and the height at which the picture was taken.
It's not my fault I'm tall.
Well, it kind of is, but anyway, please continue.
Anyway, so I've never done Halloween before, but they had the candy by the door and some kids would come and knock and trick or treat and they'd give them, they'd have these costumes and all the stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is quaint. It's just like on television in America,
Sure.
Anyway, so I get a phone call, so I go outside to not be rude and talk in the house. And it's a pretty long phone call. It's a pretty, drawn out thing, and while I'm standing out there having a phone call, some kids go past me and say trick or treat, and I'm like, I don't have any candy, the candy's in the house and I'm outside of the house, so like, what do I do? So I figure the thing is trick or treat. I didn't trick them, I just made fun of their shit costume. And they got like, these kids got pissed off, man.
What did you say? Well, first of all, what were their costumes?
Can your parents suck for letting you out with shit costumes?
You're not supposed to say that to kids.
Well, they suck. Their costumes were dumb.
What were they?
Oh, one was like meant to be a clown, but it just looked weird.
Okay, well,
the other one just had like, I don't know, but it was riding his bicycle.
Oh.
I'm like, dude, you can't be scary while riding a bicycle. Nothing scary rides a bicycle.
I remember distinctly when I was a kid, one year for Halloween, I was lazy and I didn't want to think of a costume, so I was taking judo classes at the time, so I just wore my judo outfit, and that was my costume. Mm. But I went to a party, and there was a whole bunch of kids with different costumes, and there was this one kid who had made his costume, and he was supposed to be a knight, and he had taken like a cardboard box, and that was his chest plate, and he was, he was wearing that as armor. And then he had a cardboard cylinder that he had made I'm sure his parents had made it. And they were all wrapped in aluminum foil. So it was a really cheaply crappy made costume, but I didn't make fun of him because I was like, oh, that's pretty cool that, you know, you were creative enough to make this costume. So, yeah.
No, I would have made... So that's who I've become. I've become the, well, the old man that enjoys making fun of children instead of giving them treats.
I was also about, you know, 8 or 9 years old at this time, and this kid was probably about 6, so there was a bit considerable... Right. Considerable closeness in our ages, so I didn't yeah. It wasn't like I was the old man making fun of kids.
Oh yeah, like when you know when the kids, you got to be careful what to say. He's a knight. He's got a shit cardboard sword. He might hit you with it.
Exactly.
What's a kid gonna do to me? Like seriously.
I don't know. Throw a baby doll at you, and then run away when you turn around.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other day, actually, for some reason. That just randomly popped into my head, yeah. I don't know why.
Those kids ran when I turned around,
They really did. Anyway.
Maybe it's because I threw their dumb doll back at them.
Maybe. And you were like, you forgot your dolly!
Yeah, I said it in a mocking voice.
You did. Anyway.
That's me. If I have a chance to make fun of children, I genuinely like kids, you know.
Hmm.
But if they're... You know, if I see an opportunity to make fun of them, when they're kids, they haven't done anything.
Sure, they deserve all the mockery they get.
Yeah. So, I used to get picked on as a kid, and I deserved it. I was a kid.
Yeah, fair enough. So you didn't give them candy, instead you gave them a trick. Not even a trick, you just insulted their costumes.
Yeah, I just made fun of them. But here's the thing, like, I was always told as a kid, like, don't take candy from strangers, which is really weird because I used to know this old guy that we used to literally call the lolly guy.
Yeah.
And like he'd always have sweets for the kids, and now I think back on it, I'm like, I used to go up to him every single time because I'd always get a lolly. I'm like, this is good. I wonder about that.
Yeah, I remember one Halloween I went trick-or-treating with my cousin in her neighborhood, and it was just the two of us, and we went around and trick-or-treated and like we got candy, and one of the last houses we went to was really dark. And we just kind of knocked on it because we were like, whatever. And the man, it was an old man who answered the door, and he was really theatrical and really into it because he was all dark on the outside of the house, and he was obviously sitting in the house in the dark. I'm sure he turned off the lights when he saw kids around. But anyway, he opens the door all slow and creakily, and he goes, ooh, and he came out with a bowl of candy, and he gave us candy. He's like, Happy Halloween, I'll see you soon, or something like that. He said something really ominous, and my cousin got so scared. She was like, oh my god, what if he poisoned the candy? And I was like, he didn't poison the candy.
You didn't give a shit.
I wanted candy.
You could tell me that the candy is poison, I'd still eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to keep me away from it. You could tell me that it's, you know, this is going to ruin your life. Your parents will no longer like you. You know, all prospects of success in the future will be gone. And be like,
hey, it's free candy.
I'm going to eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So needless to say, the candy was not poisoned.
To be fair, I'd still like that now.
What? If the poison was candy? If the candy was poison?
I mean, either way. If there's candy, I'm there.
Well, yeah, we had candy at the trick-or-treat Halloween expo. I had a bucket full of Reese's peanut butter cups that I was offering to anyone who came by and played Lamplight City.
That's cool.
Yeah. There was one little girl who came and ran up. She couldn't have been more than like 6 years old. She came and she ran up and she was very close because I had the candy right next to me and next to the table I was sitting at. And she kind of squirmed her way in while someone was playing and she was looking at the candy. I'm like, hi, can I help you? And she's like, she just kind of stared at me with this mischievous look in her eye. And I'm like, you want some candy?
Like, you know what I'm here for.
Yeah, I was like,
she was like, don't play coy with me.
Pretty much. I was like, so you want some candy, huh? And she's like, and I was like, all right, here, have some candy. Trick or treat. Get out of here. But anyway, yeah. I had a little girl play a little bit, and she was like, oh my god, mom, this is so cool. It's like Pokemon. Which made me laugh. Because it's absolutely nothing like Pokemon. And then I also had one, I mean, everyone who played was really cool and they really enjoyed it and they complimented it and everything. And there was one girl who was playing it and she started playing it. And then I think she kind of got bored because she didn't like all the reading. And she was just like, I don't really want to play this anymore. I'm like, you don't have to. You want some candy? And she's like, okay. And she took it and left.
Maybe she thought she had to finish it to earn the candy.
Maybe. Anyway. So yeah, that was.
You should have made her. I would have made her.
Nah,
I
would have made her finish it. I didn't want her. I didn't want her to have a negative experience playing.
Yeah, and you know she's blocking up for the paying customers.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, she technically was a paying customer too if she got in, but whatever. Anyway, yeah, Halloween. So that's fun. So yeah, we don't really have a topic this week, because we couldn't really think of one. So we're just going to talk crap, and we're basically going to spend the entire podcast, as we joked last time, talking about what we've been playing in the hiatus we had between episodes 99 and 100. So why don't you go first? Tell me what you've...
No, why don't you go first?
Because I can't remember everything I've been playing.
How do you think I feel?
You have a lot more to remember than I do. Well okay, I'll tell you... go ahead.
I mean, I've played a lot of games recently, man. Like, I went away, so that put a nice little 2-week dent in me finishing games. You know, that was for the best, honestly. Uh-huh. but because PlayStation 3 games are really cheap now.
Yeah.
So I've been sort of scouring for used PlayStation 3 games on eBay and just buying them up.
Mm.
And, like, in the past, I want to say month and a half, I've probably finished. Let's count how many. There you go. I've finished 8 PlayStation 3 games. Oh, no, sorry, 7. I mean, I finished one last night and started another one, which I finished tonight.
Right.
Like, they're just, it's just happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so that's like, I've been playing a lot of games, you know.
Clearly.
But when was the last podcast we did? What did I talk about?
Well, the last podcast...
in terms of what I'd been playing.
The last podcast we did was 100, where we didn't talk about what we were playing. And before that was 99, which we did in, like... Oh, God, I don't remember.
Did we do that one when it was in your, like, apartment?
No. This was... We did, like, 2 or 3 after you got back from my place.
Okay.
But, I mean, I would hope so, because you were here in, what, June? Yeah, you were here in June.
I was, yeah.
And
man, the second half of this year has really shot past.
It really has. I think the last podcast we did was around September or so.
Mm,
and I don't know, at that point, you had played, I don't remember, I don't listen to the podcast. Maybe I should have listened to it as a refresher.
Yeah, I've finished this year 63 games.
Holy crap.
That's not counting the ones that I've, like, played. And, you know, some of those are pretty short.
Yeah.
You know, like a couple hours long. Some of them are games I've played before.
Yeah, sure.
Like
same.
Kyrandia 2 and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of these things, like, I just, this week I played through. You'll have to excuse my coffee. I'm very sorry.
It's fine.
This week I played through Crysis 2. And that was a long game, man. That took a while. I played through Skyrim in a weekend.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Here's the thing, like, it was a big weekend, like, I stayed up super late on Friday night and Saturday night playing it.
Sure.
And, you know, but when I finished it on Sunday afternoon, I had enough time left on my Sunday to finish the second half of Battlefield 3's campaign.
Jesus. So it was just a game-filled, like, non-stop weekend, huh?
Oh, no, I went out for a walk and I,
well,
know,
good, I would hope so.
Washed my car and stuff like that, but I was like...
I hope you also washed yourself.
Well, that goes without saying.
I don't know.
I don't think we need to.
I mean,
listen,
I don't,
when you play games, you might let your personal hygiene slip.
No, I'm not. I'm not pointing the finger at you specifically. I'm just saying that, you know, the sort of nerd stereotype is that when you get really engrossed in something, then you just get really gross. See what I did there?
Engrossed and gross. I get it.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thanks.
Mm.
Anyway,
but yeah, like. I've been playing, I don't know what I want to talk about. I don't know, because it's hard to remember how far back, but I'll mention some of them briefly.
Well, some highlights, the ones that have stuck with you.
Mm. to where I think I got up. Have I talked about Ori and the Blind Forest?
Nope.
That's one that's worth...
You told me about it briefly, but you have not really expounded upon it.
Yeah, see, that was 20 finished games ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's like a platformer. It's like they call them Metroidvanias. You know, you explore, you unlock more of the world. And I'd played one Metroidvania this year in the form of Axiom Verge, which I enjoyed very much.
Yes.
That's like a NES palette.
Yeah.
You know, pixely kind of game. This is very much a a beautiful game, and it's incredibly beautiful, like really, really pretty. It's got some challenging puzzles, you know. I found some of the bits unnecessarily frustrating. You know how in the Rayman games, Rayman Origins, you've got the treasure chest chases?
Sure.
And you're like, you have to learn it perfectly before you can beat it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
This has got three sections just like that, where you have to try it over and over and over and over again, getting it perfectly and then doing it.
Mm.
For the most part, it's not like that. But there's a couple of bits, and I just went, oh, this really breaks up the pacing of this game, considering the rest of it's so open. But, you know, I did it. but pretty. Oh, man, so pretty. I played Stories, The Path of Destinies, which is really interesting because it's a very short narrative. You can play through it in maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But each time you uncover a different alternate end to the story. So there's like, I don't know how many. I think there's got to be 20 endings to the game.
It's a lot.
Depending on which path you take. It's the Path of Destinies, right? So,
right.
You know, and basically by process of elimination, you find all the wrong endings. You find out who was lying, who will betray you, everything like that. Eventually you get the right ending.
Right. It's funny because I remember when I saw the trailer for for that game, I was joking about how completely generic the title is.
Yeah, it's the worst title, and yet, yeah. You know, a very interesting and unique approach to having a sort of narrative unfold.
Before, I'm glad that it wasn't as generic as the title would suggest.
Yeah, and some of it you're replaying the same bits over and over again to find out, you know, this time you made a different choice, you trusted a different person, now you got to fight through this same bit. But because it's so short to play through each time, that never really bothered me too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, towards the end, I was like, okay, I'm ready to be done with this. You know, I don't want to unlock all the endings and everything like that. But just to see someone try something different like that was really nice.
Hmm.
So that was really good. I'm just going to get a lozenge.
Okay. Well, while you do that, I'll tell you about some of the games that I've played that I can think of right now. Well, one of the things I did was I rediscovered my Nintendo Entertainment System, or NES, mm-hmm. or NES, as you might call it.
They have the NES Mini out today, I think.
They do, yeah, actually. It comes with 30 games. No, I don't need one. I've got plenty of games. Although I do want to get Battletoads. Well, I mean, I have it on emulator. Well, so that's the thing. My friend Kirk, he came over a few weeks ago and he brought over his, Mac on which he had one of this universal emulator. So we plugged it into my TV and it had support.
I gotta say, that's a less fun name than Nesticle.
Yeah, I know. Nesticle was a good one.
That's a great name.
Yeah. Anyway, so we plugged it into my TV and it had support for PS4 and Xbox One controllers. So I used I used my PS4 controller and he used an Xbox One controller that he brought with him. And so we were playing NES games with those controllers, which was cool. And actually this happened a while ago because it was around it was before Comic-Con, which had already happened when we last podcast. Anyway, so we were playing and he's like, oh, what's a good two-player game for us to play? Cause he didn't really have an NES growing up. And so I was like, oh man, we need to get Battletoads. Cause I used to love Battletoads when I was a kid. And so we played Battletoads and man, Battletoads, it brought back a bunch of memories because Battletoads it's definitely a game that you should play as a single player experience unless you want to kill and hate your friends. Because Battletoads is not only a very difficult game on its own, mostly because everything is pretty much out to kill you, and you only get, you start off with 3 lives, and you only get 3 continues, so it's pretty, and there's a lot of things that will kill you, like, in one hit, so it's pretty easy to die fairly early on. The other thing is that it makes the unique distinction of being one of the few co-op two-player games where you can actually hurt your partner. So,
oh, that's not very nice.
No, it's not. So there's a bit in the second level. I don't know if you're, how familiar you are with Battletoads, but the second level is called the Impact Crater, and basically it's a scrolling vertical level where you're descending into this crater on ropes. You're rappelling down these craters. And so you're getting attacked by, like, birds and man-eating plants and, like, these robots that fly around and electrocute you and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the fun things about Battletoads is that they have these special attacks where, like, parts of their body get really big and cartoony and exaggerated. Like, if you punch something, their fists will get really big. If they kick something, their feet get really big. So,
nice.
This level has a particular special, like, level-specific attack, which is if you move your character to the left or right edge of the screen and you let them stay there for a few seconds, they'll start blinking in the form of, like, a wrecking ball. And if you press the attack button, they launch off the side and they do this really devastating attack that's a wrecking ball attack where they just smash across the side of the screen and anything in the path gets knocked out in one hit, including your partner if they're in the way. Mm-hmm. So that's a really tough level to play with that as two people. And then of course there's the famous turbo tunnel sequence, which is not as difficult as everyone makes it out to be once you memorize it. It's like you say, it's like the very much in the school of the Rayman design with the chess where you have to get it pretty much perfect in order to survive it. I mean, but once you do, it's okay. There's levels that are later on that are ridiculously hard. There's one where you have to basically do the same thing, but on a plane, and you have to, like, you have to memorize the level or else there's no way you can finish it. And if you're playing it with someone who's not as experienced and, you know, doesn't know the layout, then it's pretty easy for, you know, them to die a lot. So Battletoads is a tough game to play with two people, but it's still a fun game.
I mean, you did pick a notoriously hard game.
I did.
A two-player game.
It is true. I should have picked something more fun like Ninja Turtles or something, but yeah. But anyway, I decided to download an emulator myself because at the time, my NES, I hadn't gotten it to work very well because, like, I plugged it into my new TV and for some reason it would only display in black and white because I was using the coaxial cables or whatever they're called. But just a couple of weeks ago, I decided to use the old RF adapter thing and plug it into my TV that way. And lo and behold, it worked in color. So my NES works again as much as it is because it's kind of old and sometimes the games need a little convincing to start working. But But yeah, so I played through the Flintstones the other day, which I tweeted about a little bit, which I had forgotten about. And, like, I remember when the Flintstones came out, I was really excited about it because it was in that sort of era where the Super Nintendo had sort of already started making its appearance. And there was a bunch of really cool-looking platformers on it, like Super Mario World, that I wanted to play. And the Flintstones, for some reason, made me think of Super Mario World. I don't know, it just had this, like, it had this charm to it and this aesthetic that I was just like, oh, this is a really cool platform. Like, it's actually a really nice later generation NES platformer. And it has, I think one of the things that I got excited about is that it has an overhead map and there's a slight,
oh, that's nice.
There's a slight feeling of non-linearity in the choosing of the levels, even though, like, there isn't really, there's really only, like, there's 2 levels that you can play in the different order, but once you clear those, you pretty much play the entire rest of the game just linearly, just following the one path down the map. But it's cool because as you go through these levels, you find, like, different members of Fred's entourage, like, you know, Wilma and Betty and Barney, obviously. But the premise of the game is really...
Do you get Bam Bam?
You don't get Bam Bam. You get Gazoo, Gazoo though.
I always like Bam Bam.
Yeah, Bam Bam and Pebbles aren't in it, unfortunately.
That's a shame.
They're only in the intro sequence, I think. But the premise of the game is really stupid, and it's actually kind of cute.
I mean, it's the Flintstones.
Yeah, I know, but the premise of the game is that the Flintstones are hanging out, and like this crazy scientist from the future shows up in a time machine and kidnaps Dino and Hoppy, who's the kangaroo. Gosh. And then he blows up Gazoo's time machine, and he spreads the pieces all over the land, so you basically have to go...
Have to collect the pieces.
Exactly. You have to beat bosses and collect the pieces. But it's cool. Mm. Like, the mechanic's cool because Fred has his club. That's his primary weapon. But then you can pick up stone axes that he throws in an arc or a slingshot. But then you also can play basketball against this fat guy for, like, special abilities. Yeah. You can either jump...
Of course.
You have a special jump, which is Fred rides this kangaroo-looking dinosaur thing and can jump really high. You have fly, where he gets wings and he can fly for a little bit. Or you have dive, which only works in one level, which is the underwater level. But it's interesting the way the system works because...
Seems a little pointless.
It is. But, well, I mean, it helps in that level. But like, say you fall down, you start falling down a bottomless pit or something, you can just pause and Gazoo helps you midair and like, you can use fly and get yourself out of that situation, which is nice.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the
that's
way,
thoughtful.
Yeah, but the way that it works is interesting because in order to use your secondary weapons or anything like that, it costs coins. So like, when you kill enemies, they drop coins and you pick them up and then each, like, the fly is actually really easy to exploit because you sort of get this sort of like upwards momentum when it starts, and then you have to press the action button to flap and go higher. But every time you press the button to flap, it costs you X amount of coins. But when you first do it, it doesn't. So like, you can totally cheat and like, say you're jumping from ledge to ledge, like you can jump and at the highest arc of your jump, you can pause and do fly, and then you'll get like a double jump basically for free.
Right.
So that's kind of cool. But anyway, it's the thing that I think is cleverest about it is that when you finally assemble the time machine and you go into the last level, which is the future, you're actually at the Jetsons world.
I mean,
and you meet,
yeah,
George Jetson, and it plays the theme song. And the final boss is really stupid because it's in three sections and it's like so ridiculously easy. And it's funny because you're fighting this guy with all this modern technology and you basically just bash him with your caveman club a few times.
I think we can all relate to that sometimes.
I think so too. Anyway, so that's the Flintstones. But I also downloaded a bunch of ROMs for my emulator, and I actually streamed them. I played Mega Man 2, which is also difficult, and I played some Battletoads, and I played Darkwing Duck, which is a charming little Capcom platformer, which is sort of in the vein of Mega Man, and I always loved Darkwing Duck when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I also downloaded The Little Mermaid, which is another Capcom licensed Disney game, which they were pretty well known for in the 90s. And
okay.
I had remembered playing it when I was a kid and enjoying it, but man, is it so weird. Like, from a game design perspective, it's just very strange how the mechanics work. Like, there's only 5 levels, so it's really short and really easy. But, like, the way that you collect power-ups and stuff is not really made clear at all. And so, it's very strange. Like, I went through pretty much more than half the game before I realized how you could get more health.
Oh, wow.
Basically, the Little Mermaid Ariel's attack is her tail, and so you use it to make bubbles and trap creatures in bubbles, and then you can pick them up and throw them as projectiles. But there's also a lot of, like, there's certain walls and stuff that have, like, a square indentation in them, and if you throw stuff in them, sometimes items will come out, like hearts or little collectibles and stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and you have to, like, pick up shells and stuff to open treasure chests, which will give you pearls,
so is it,
which increase
your
special
attack. Is it underwater,
attack.
Mostly?
Yeah, it's completely underwater, yeah.
Is it like Echo the Dolphin?
Not really. I mean...
Okay. I like Echo the Dolphin.
I guess in that, yeah, you're going through the underwater levels and stuff, but it's not as sophisticated.
Without having to get oxygen, like in Sonic and stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure, because she's a mermaid. There's one ice level, though, which is weird, because...
That is weird.
Whatever. But and the boss is a walrus.
She's really not sort of equipped.
She's
for
really
icy
not.
Weather.
No, she's not. And then the funny thing is, if she there's certain bits in certain levels where you can jump up and on land, and she's she just kind of flops around like a fish and hops very slowly.
Nice.
But yeah, like you have to use your tail to dig up patches of sand in certain places, and there's sometimes items hidden in there too. So it's weird.
That's sweet.
I guess. It's not a very good game, but whatever.
Anyway. I like some of those Disney games from the 90s.
Yeah, they're okay. Some are better than others. Like Chip and Dale is one of the better ones.
Did you ever play the Tarzan platform game?
I didn't. Was that on Super Nintendo? Or
no, that
Genesis?
I don't know about console. I think it was PlayStation 1 generation by
oh,
then.
Oh yeah, no, that I didn't then.
Yeah, I only played it on PC, but that thing blew my mind, man, cuz he'd like slide. It was really well animated.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I think they may have even motion captured it. I don't know.
Well,
it was incredible.
The Aladdin Sega Genesis game is really, really good. I think they ported that to PC as well, because there was an SNES version that wasn't as good, which came out at the same time.
I have the Lion King, and that's pretty tough. And the Jungle Book is very tough and interesting.
Yeah. Aladdin was cool because the animation was really good, and it had all the songs from the movie. Is the level music.
Mm. And I remember after that they went to like weird PlayStation 1 3D games for like Hercules and Atlantis, and I was like, this isn't my thing.
Yeah, they didn't quite work as well. But anyway, yeah, I also played I also got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, the Manhattan Project, which I think I showed you some screenshots, which were pretty funny. Yeah. That where Shredder kidnaps the entire island of Manhattan and the turtles somehow manage to get from Florida to New York in the span of like one level just by surfing and
you
taking a
funny?
Submarine.
You know how you showed me the screenshot of Manhattan Island being lifted up into the air?
Yes.
When I was playing Crysis 2 last night, the final level is literally Central Park that has been lifted up into the air. And I was like, nice. Oh, this is Ninja Turtles all over again.
Yeah, that seems to be a common thing to happen here.
Let's just lift Manhattan or parts of it into the sky.
Sure, why not?
For fun.
Why not? Anyway, that's mostly the NES games I've been playing. I'll throw it back to you until, before I go into the PC games I played. Because I played some doozies.
Oh, gosh.
and you did too, actually.
I do.
You do? You did. You do.
I played the Banner Saga.
Oh, right. Okay. How many games? Let me ask you something real quick. How many games? Because you were talking about this, about how you were happy to go to Melbourne and have good internet because you could download a bunch of games. How many games did you download while you were in Melbourne?
Well, I mostly downloaded games in the US.
Yeah, but didn't you say there were also ones that were coming out around the time that you were going to be in Melbourne and you were going to be able to do
what did I get? I got... I got Masquerada when I was in...
Oh, yeah.
That's the main one I got. I got a few other ones.
I heard a bunch of people saying really good things about it, and then no one said anything else.
Yeah, it's been a really quiet release, which is a shame. I'm really excited to play it, because it's like... It's exactly my kind of thing. So, yeah, I'm really excited.
It actually kind of looked like my kind of thing. I was intrigued by it.
I think it might... I think in terms of...
Setting?
Game... play, it'll be a little bit like, I mean, you've played Planescape Torment, so you know what you're in for. You've played XCOM, you know what you're in for, kind of thing. You know. But yeah, the setting looks so interesting and unique. I'm really looking forward to trying that. but yeah, so I played the Banner Saga, and it's interesting because it's clearly a cross between like the sort of turn-based tactical XCOM Fallout kind of thing, where you're doing like really tactical decisions, but then kind of like the Oregon Trail where like you have to make decisions on journey and just everything goes wrong constantly and you're just miserable. it's kind of just this bleak, just this journey of despair where no matter what you do, like every now and then something goes right and you're like, oh, good things can happen in this game. And then just every other decision you make after that, like characters you liked die or betray you and stuff like that, and you're just like, oh my god, just please. So you know, but it's a beautiful game. It plays well. Interesting combat. It does stuff that I've never seen tactical combat games do before. And for that, I really admire it because I've played lots of tactical combat games. And when something brings ideas that are very fresh and inventive and unique to the table, I'm like, oh, dude, I'm totally into this. Like, you know, and it took me a little while to learn. But, you know, I never lost battles or anything like that. It was pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. But yeah, beautifully made game. I'm looking forward to trying the sequel. Mm-hmm. I played Pan Pan, which is a pretty short, pretty minimalistic adventure game. It's got no words, no writing, no dialogue. You have to figure out puzzles just from looking at them. But I really enjoyed it for some reason. Hmm. Some of the puzzles are pretty tough.
For some reason.
I know. In John Walker's review, he was like, there's one puzzle that I literally have no idea how you solve it. And I got stuck for quite a while in that same puzzle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoy solving puzzles through deduction and exploration and, you know, putting the things together. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely a game that you observe what happens, you figure it out from there. I enjoyed it for that. I played Legend of Grimrock, which is as good as everybody says it is.
Okay.
You know, and I don't know, I love old dungeon crawly type games, as everybody knows that's listened to this podcast, and Legend of Grimrock is one of those, but with modern graphics. And I want to play the sequel, which is apparently very different, but you know, Legend of Grimrock never gets carried away with details. It's one of those games that focuses on the core mechanics,
mm-hmm.
and it has really clever puzzles with with those core mechanics, and you feel so clever when you solve them. It's like, you know, I love solving puzzles because it makes you feel smart. You know that?
Sure.
There's like, I played a little bit of The Witness while I was in
mm-hmm.
the US, and there was like one puzzle that I solved in there where I was like, oh man, I'm a genius. You know, like, oh, I just solved an incredible thing. Like, you know, and Legend of Grimrock was a little bit like that. You got really fun puzzles. I just love that sort of thing. And the combat, the combat's the same as that combat always is. You do skeleton square dancing and just, you know.
Skeleton square dancing?
Yeah, that's what I call it. Because you just, you stay in four squares, and when they move, you move out of the way and then you hit them.
Oh, okay. I have a question. I have a question before you. This is sort of related, but sort of unrelated. I've noticed that there's a term that you use when you play certain games of this type that I'm not aware of. I think I may have asked you. I don't remember. Kiting?
Oh, kiting, yeah. Kiting,
what is that?
Basically, it's something I especially use in like sort of real time with pause games. But kiting, I heard Eggy refer to it as Benny Hilling, which is such a great term for it. Because basically, kiting means running away.
Right.
And kiting, especially in like group, in like party-based role-playing games, it's not so much something, it's not the same, like in a blobber, like Legend of Grimrock, a blobber is means your whole party moves as one blob.
Okay.
So.
How technical. You know, and
that's the term for it. That's what they're called.
Good.
But yeah, kiting, mostly in a game like Baldur's Gate or Planescape Torment, I tried to get you to do this while you're playing it. You have someone that's very quick, hopefully pretty well armored,
mm-hmm.
so that not much can hit them. Distract all of the enemy units, mm-hmm. so the enemy units chase them around while the rest of your people shoot the units at their own leisure.
Got it.
So basically, you've got someone acting as, well, we've got what you call a tank. A tank is a unit that's very, very heavily armored and very, very, has lots of health. So they can basically take anything, any damage that you throw at them, and their job is to be at the front lines and soak up, they're like the shield that guards the rest of the party, while the fancy wizards do their magic wee wee wees, you know. That's how wizards cast spells. They go,
speaking of magic, wee wee wees. Well, I can hold out a little bit longer.
We can take a break if you need.
But no, yeah, it's fine. I'm not trolls.
Okay.
Hi, trolls.
Kiting is the opposite of that. Karting is, instead of relying on someone that just stands there and takes it like a big wall, you have someone that's just constantly dodging.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, fluttering around in the wind like a kite.
Yeah, I don't know where the term came from, but yeah, Benny Hilling is such a good word for it.
Okay.
We've learned two words today. We've learned blobber and we've learned karting.
Those aren't words. They're just terms.
Terms.
Anyway, please
continue. So I played Projector Face.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw...
Which is an AGS game.
Yeah. I saw a review of it.
Sorry.
Oh, no. Don't be.
What did you see?
Oh, I saw a review of it. I saw some guy's video review of it. It looked very interesting. And sad. It was... I thought it was kind of sad how every time he showed a film, it was not what he expected it to be.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of was what sold me on the game. Like, when I started playing, I was like, oh, this is cool, you know? And then, like, he's trying to get the kids to be happy, and
yeah.
Like, the kids just totally terrified.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I like this game, you know?
Why does that not surprise me in the least?
I like... my favorite form of comedy is tragedy.
Yes, I know.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's a nice game. It's not too long. The puzzles are pretty straightforward. You know, you don't find it. I didn't find it too easy, but it wasn't too hard either.
Mm-hmm.
Nice graphics.
Mm.
I don't know what more I could say without going too in depth, but you know, it's one of those tragic comedies that's kind of arts in its presentation because you're walking around as a film projector,
sure.
And you know, everything's sad and miserable and you're just trying to do your little bit to cheer up the world and it just goes totally wrong each time and you end up having to break out of jail.
And the ending is pretty tragic too.
The ending, I love how tragic the ending is because it could have been such a la-di-da happy ending and it just avoids that.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to skip a couple. I don't even remember what that game is. I remember playing it, like the title. But I don't even know what that is. I'm looking at my list of games I've finished. I played the Stanley Parable. Have you played that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's interesting.
I keep meaning to, but I haven't gotten around to it. Yeah. I saw it was on sale recently. But
it's interesting. Yeah. It's yeah, it's hard to describe without ruining everything, you know?
Yeah, that's what I get. That's the general impression I get.
But it's a little bit like Stories, The Path of Destinies, where it's very short and you replay it over and over and over and over, and each time you do something slightly differently, and, you know, you see new things that you can do, and you're like, oh.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What was the game that you said you didn't remember just now?
It's called Merger 3D.
Merger 3D?
Yeah.
Sounds like a business sim.
It really does. I wonder what it is. Let's look it up. Right, it's the Wolfenstein clone.
Oh.
That was okay.
Okay.
I really like the graphics. I didn't like the gameplay so much. Oh. And the final level's just annoying bullshit.
Okay.
But if you like DOS-style first-person shooters in like a shareware kind of vein, and you didn't get enough of them in the 90s somehow...
I didn't, actually.
I mean, for the people that sought them out, there were freaking heaps of them. But
sure.
I mean, there's better games you could be playing, honestly.
Like Strife.
I liked it, but yeah.
Hmm. Fair enough.
Blazing Angels 2, I talked about that last time. I played Burnout Paradise.
Right, yeah, you did.
That's a fun game.
Take me out to the paradise. Oh, man, did you ever play Paganitsu?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Anatoly, posted a screenshot, or maybe it was Lazy Game. I don't know. It was one of those DOS people.
I think it was me. I've posted the thing in the second level where you...
You find the Paganitsu wall. No, I don't think it was you. Was it? I don't know. Anyway, someone posted the screenshot, and it brought back good memories of playing Paganitsu when I was a kid.
Mm. Yeah, that was a cool game.
Yeah.
That was kind of like one of those games where you got to memorize the level, then solve it. Then
Yeah. It was a fun little shareware game.
Yeah. What else? Burnout Paradise is... I realized that I hadn't played a racing game this year, like a new one, and I always try to make... Like, I try to keep things fresh. I try to play new flight games. I try to play new action games, new adventure games, new shooter games. I try to keep a bit of everything, bit of strategy, bit of role-playing.
Sure.
You know, I like all the genres. I realized I hadn't played any racing games this year. So, last year, the racing game that I played for the first time was Slipstream 2000, which was a DOS racing game. So this year I was like, let me get something modern. You know, I got a PS3, I got no racing games for it.
And there's plenty. Let me see what I can get. So, good platform to pick for.
Yeah. So, I got a couple, and so far the one I've finished is Burnout Paradise. And I mean, it's a big game to finish, because it's like, it's interesting, because all the races take place in an open city.
Yeah, sure.
Which is a really interesting choice, because most racing games, they put you on a track. Even like Need for Speed Underground, which is in the same city, they're like, you can't go down the side roads and stuff, they block them off.
Hmm.
Whereas Burnout Paradise, like, they don't block anything off. Like, you just drive and hope you pick the right course, which is kind of frustrating when you don't know the city very well, because, like, sometimes you're just doing a race and, yeah, like, you know, and there's a race at every single intersection, really? Pretty much.
Isn't that, wait, the, which game am I thinking of? I know, because my dad has a whole bunch of racing games, and I played some of them. There's one game where you're, like, you're driving around and it's open world. I don't think it was Burnout Paradise, but you're driving around the open world and you, like, challenge people to races when you get to them. Is that one of the Need for Speed games?
I don't know. I'm honestly out of touch with racing games, dude. Oh, I can't help you there. But yeah, it could be. Yeah, there's a lot of Need for Speed games for PlayStation 3. I was shocked. I think there's 9.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, I loved Need for Speed back in the 90s when it was Need for Speed 1 and 2. And, yeah, you know, and then, you know, I
maybe,
played
Need maybe for Speed one of 3 our...
and then...
Yeah.
They just got out of hand.
They did. Maybe one of our listeners can enlighten us and let us know which game it is that I'm thinking of where you're basically driving around. I don't think it was L.A. Maybe it was. Maybe it was No, it wasn't Midnight Club. Because I don't think... Well, maybe it was Midnight Club. I think it was Midnight Club. Know. Yeah, Midnight Club. Because then you were driving around the open... Well, because it's a Rockstar game. So you're driving around the open world of L.A. And then you would get to, like, places and you'd have people contacting you. And it was basically like GTA. Except instead of going on missions, every mission was a racing mission.
That seems kind of cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
You know, I saw something interesting. I saw Richard Garriott tweet the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Someone asked him if the Lamborghini in the Need for Speed 1 introduction was actually his, and he said, yes, they borrowed my Lamborghini and Chris Roberts' Ferrari for the intro of Need for Speed 1. They burnt out the clutch
His
Lamborghini and never fixed it for him.
Wow.
Electronic Arts. They're assholes.
Yep.
I think Origin thought that already.
Probably.
To be fair.
Probably.
But yeah, there's a little bit of trivia that we learned from social media.
Fascinating.
But yeah, Burnout Paradise is interesting because, you know, there were some races that I did pretty easily and there were other races where I had to, like, do the race, fail, then remember the route and then practice the route so I had that really clearly in my head, start the race again and then do it. And because it's an open world, sometimes you come around a corner perfectly and there's just traffic there that you just smash into.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying.
But I will say this, like, they knew what the problem was. It's pretty clear because the rubber banding is really forgiving.
I see. Well,
so that's good. You know, sometimes it feels kind of lame, like you've crashed 4 times and you'll still win a race just because, you know, you have a good second half of the race.
Sure.
Know? So that's kind of frustrating. But, you know, I really enjoyed it. It's pretty arcadey to control. You don't have to learn, like, the controls too well.
Right.
There's tons of cars. So, you know, there's lots of different events. I enjoyed it. It's pretty fun.
Good.
Good soundtrack. No, actually, why did I say good soundtrack? It's not that good. It's very Electronic Arts. Electronic Arts racing games have really specific style of soundtracks, which has a lot of young, angry men rock music.
Mm.
So, you know. Mm. But some of the songs in there were good. It's funny, though, because, like, after all that, there's classical music on the soundtrack. So, like, you'd be racing around the streets to, like, I think Moonlight Sonata was
Yeah,
stuff
I
like
remember
that.
That. There's different... Yeah, you can pick the music, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. What else did I play? I told you about Skyrim. Skyrim,
yes.
If you need me to tell you about Skyrim, then you haven't paid any attention at all.
I haven't really paid any attention at all.
But it's funny because, like, when I started playing Skyrim, people were like, oh, which side are you going to pick in the Civil War and who are you going to marry and where are you going to buy? I didn't do any of that shit. I just played the main story quest, and people were like, there's a there's a main story quest. I'm like, I've finished Skyrim.
Yeah,
you know, which is good for me because when I play Skyrim, I've done all those dungeons in Morrowind and Oblivion and Fallout 3. I've done all that shit. You know, I've played those games before. I know what I'm getting. And even in the main story campaign, the dungeons get repetitive. So, you know how those games are.
Well, sort of, but yeah.
They're big, but the dungeons get repetitive and stuff like that. And I was like, I knew, like, if I don't just blast through this, I'm going to be beaten like, oh, man, I've played these missions all before. I'm bored of this. I'll come back to it later. And then, you know. So I just blasted straight through it. Had a blast. Finished the game, and you know, it's still pretty, like, they've just remastered it still looked pretty to me.
Well, good. I'll give you a little break because you're coughing a lot.
Please.
So I've been progressing through my Quest for Glory series playthrough. I played Quest for Glory 1 VGA many months ago, like way many months ago, I think before you even came here. And yeah, so I finally decided to sit down and play Quest for Glory 2, but I decided to do something a little different this time around, and I decided to play the Quest for Glory 2 VGA remake by AGDI Interactive, who are now Himalaya Studios. And that was interesting because I had only really played through the VGA remake, I think, once before. And I realized I had played it as a magic user last time as well. So I haven't actually played the VGA. I haven't actually seen the other paths in the VGA remake, which is
Magic
a shame.
Magic is your favorite to play, isn't it?
No, actually, it's weird because the different Quest for Glory games are, each chapter has, I would say, an ideal outcome with a different character class. Except for the first one. The first one's pretty universal. You get a pretty cool experience with no matter who you play, but I would say that Quest for Glory 2 is most fun as either a magic user or a thief. And it's okay as a fighter because you can, that's the game where you can become a paladin, but it's kind of boring as a, not really boring as a fighter, but like there's more to do because there's, you obviously in any game that you play as the fighter, you have to like go out and kill every single enemies if you, every single one of the enemies if you want to get a full score.
You gotta grind.
Yeah, well, you have to grind anyway. Oh my god. That's true. I did so much grinding in the VGA remake.
Throw another rock.
Well, no, thankfully, magic users don't need throwing skills. Only thieves and fighters do. But yeah, no, I had to do a whole lot of grinding for weapon use and dodge. And that is like, it basically, well, the thing with Quest for Glory 2, I find, is that It's great. I love the game, but it definitely suffers a lot from, okay, you did the big thing that you had to do. Now you get like, cause it's very much on a timer, like more than any of the other games, stuff happens on certain days. And like, it gives you like 2 or 3 days to take care of the problem. And I'm trying to be as spoiler free as possible because I know you still have to play them. And so like, if you know what to do and you take care of it right away, then you have like 2 or 3 days to kill before the next thing happens. And so you basically just spend all that time grinding. At least I do, because I like to be a perfectionist and get all my skills as close to the max in each game as possible. So, so yeah, basically I spend all that time practicing weapon use and dodge. As a magic user. But anyway, yeah, so like Quest for Glory 3 is probably the best as a magic user, actually. And 4 is best as a paladin, but magic user is okay too. And thief is alright too. 3 sucks for a thief. That's the only problem. And 5,
ooh, okay.
5 is actually kind of nice for all the classes because it kind of ties everything together. It kind of, for every class, there's an opportunity to sort of like reach your maximum potential.
Cause oh, like, that's cool.
You can become chief thief in 5 as well as king. And
wow.
In 4, really yeah.
Play both sides of the field there.
Exactly. And like you can, you know, become a super wizard at the end or like super fighter, whatever. Like basically you know, it's cool.
You peak.
Yeah, basically. Peak! The only problem is that the stats kind of become meaningless in 5, but I still like to, for my own peace of mind,
grind. Sometimes it's nice to fill the number bars up just for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I played through Quest for Glory 2 VGA, which was fun. They did this really interesting thing where they sort of let you pick your difficulty level at the beginning. So, like, I didn't really feel like dragging out my map of Shapir, and I didn't feel like getting lost. So they do a thing where they put the street navigation on easy mode. They have the option to, and so it gates off every street that you don't have to go through for the story. Which is all right. But to be honest, I much prefer the way that the street navigation works in the EGA version than the VGA version.
Okay.
And the thing too that they did in the VGA version, which is kind of nice, is at least as a magic user, is they added a couple of extra little mini games that let you improve certain skills. Like you can play against the owner of the magic shop, and you can play against the other magic user that you consult with a lot, two different games, and playing those games will up your intelligence and your magic points, or skills, I should say. So that was a nice little fun diversion and a way to get your skills up. Cause, I mean, I'm sure you know, well, you definitely know this from playing Quest for Glory, but it definitely practices that same Elder Scrolls, thing skills learning by doing. Yeah, which I like, actually.
I think it's definitely got its place. It depends.
Yeah, it definitely depends. Like in Quest for Glory, you know, one, you stand there and you climb the tree over and over again. That's kind of silly, but it gets even sillier in 4 because you can actually like literally click on trees in the forest and it just says, after some climbing practice, you decide to something and you just click over and over and over again and you can up your climbing stats by doing that.
Interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, so I did that and I finished it and then I started on Quest for Glory 3 and I'm sort of in the middle of Quest for Glory 3 because I made a really stupid decision to copy or uninstall it and reinstall it because ScumVM was giving me a message that it had some like fan patch that I had applied who knows how long ago and that might mess things up. And so I got a couple of bugs like the Endless Day bug that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that might be the cause. So I uninstalled it and reinstalled it, and of course I invalidated my save games. So
that's a shame.
I had to start from the beginning. Luckily, I hadn't gotten too far, but unfortunately, it turns out that that bug with the not getting dark at night was not a result of those patches. So I think it's a ScumVM thing. So I didn't feel like starting all over again in DOSBox, so I'm just going to finish it as with Endless Days, basically.
Fair enough.
But I'm really looking forward to playing 4 and 5, as I was telling you yesterday, because 4 is my favorite one, and I was looking at screenshots of 5, and yeah, it's kind of weird and it's kind of strange 3D and stuff, but it's still more than any of the other games. It's definitely different in some of the mechanics, but it still, I feel, preserves that feeling of Quest for Glory. And it just, it's a nice end to the series, and at least you get a nice conclusion.
Mm.
Even though the voice acting is kind of shit, but whatever.
That's the only one that I played the demo for as a kid, and I love the hell out of that demo, man. That was...
Well, the demo, like we've said many times, is very not indicative of the final gameplay. It doesn't matter. Anyway, so there's that.
Have you been playing PlayStation 4 much?
No, I was playing Fallout 4, and I had gotten back into it, and I was really getting back into it. And then I got to the Institute, and then it just got really boring for me because...
You're struggling with this one.
Well, here's the thing. So, when I first started playing it, there was this whole thing about, find your son, and I was walking around and exploring the world and like doing side quests and stuff and picking up companions. And I felt overwhelmed and I was like, man, this is a lot to do. And I don't feel like I'm focusing on the main story and like, I'm just doing all this extra crap and whatever. So I kind of just got bored of it. And then I decided to give it another chance. And I got into it because I started following the main quest line, which became interesting. And like, as part of the main quest line, there was a few side quests that were related that were really interesting too. And I met more companions and like, I started doing stuff and I wanted to like try and get them in my good graces so I could get their perks, or I could get in their good graces rather, so I could get their perks.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I did it, and then I met Nick Valentine, who's a pretty cool character, and like, he was important to the main quest, and then I got to the main quest and I got to the Institute and I found my son, and I was just like, okay, so now it feels like I solved the main big important mystery, and now it basically is, okay, here are the factions that you've met throughout the game. Now you're going to have to do quests for them and eventually pick one, and that'll determine your ending. And I'm like, I don't really want to do that now. It's kind of like how you felt with the Dragon Age Origins, right? So like, yeah, I got to kinda. I did the really cool, interesting stuff, and now it's turned into a, okay, you're going to have to save the world or pick a side thing. And I'm just, I'm not feeling it right now, you know? So maybe I'll go back to it, but I just, right now, I just don't really care to.
I saw a bit of Fallout 4 at someone's house, and they had like, oh, this is the house that I built, and it's got like, you know, they collected this and they collected that and they collected 19 different power armors or something like
that. But ultimately, the, like,
Bethesda, you're so Bethesda now.
The thing with the power armor in Fallout 4 is that, like, in 3 and New Vegas, power armor was like this big deal because it was super rare. But here, it's like you get power armor within the first like 10 minutes of the game. And then, yeah, you can customize it and all this crap, but you have to collect all these materials in order to be able to customize it. And it really doesn't make a big difference. And because it's third person.
Like, I saw this thing and I'm like, they're just really exploiting the open world thing now.
Yeah, and because it's third person, or it, as far as like the dialogue now, like when you click dialogue options, you actually see your character talking. When he's in power armor, or she is in power armor, it's like, it's just this big blob that's just there and clipping through most things, going, oh, well, tell me about this, because their voice gets all radio distorted when they're in the power armor. So it's really stupid.
But yeah. So, yeah, I just saw like how much of the game is focused around collecting and
and building and all this stuff. I'm like, I don't really care for
that's
that.
That's why I skipped all that shit in Skyrim, because I know if I do that stuff, I'll get bored.
I mean, I really enjoyed the whole like Silver Shroud subquest thing, and I actually saw someone at Comic-Con cosplaying as the Silver Shroud, which was pretty cool.
That's the thing, though, like,
but yeah,
with those games, people are like, oh, the side quests are always more interesting than the main quests. That's true for some of them, but some of the side quests are also like, go here and do the thing, come back.
Oh, yeah. And then you just do them for the XP, basically.
All the loot. Yeah.
Didn't Skyrim start this trend of like, oh, we have infinite quests, and it's basically just like, oh, go X and bring back Y, and then you'll get XP.
I don't think Skyrim has infinite quests. I don't know. I only played like 4 of the side quests.
I'm pretty sure that they made a big thing about how like it has infinite quests, because there's certain quests that it's basically the same thing every single time, just different locations and different items that they cycle through. Like, go to X cave and kill X number of rats or whatever. Well, Fallout 4 has the same thing. There's one character who just never stops giving you quests, and it's like, go to this settlement and protect them. So you go to the settlement, and then raiders show up, or super mutants show up, or the other faction shows up, and like, you have to defend them, and then they're like, oh, thank you so much, and then you have to go back and report to the character, and then you get like, you know, 100 XP or something. He's like, oh, I have another quest for you. Go over here.
It sounds like it would tire very quickly.
Oh, it does. It really does. So it's basically three quest types. Either go to this settlement and clear out the enemies there so people can settle in. Go to this settlement that already has people and defend them and build it up a little bit with defense and then defend the things. Or go to this settlement and talk to them, and then they'll be like, oh, there's a camp of super mutants or raiders or something over here. Go and defeat them, and then you do that.
You know what that reminds me of? It was Darkstar 1.
Oh, yeah?
with the doo doo doo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, of course. I remember that song well.
Yeah. But yeah, I just felt like I was doing the same quest over and over. And I liked Baxter one, but at one point I was like, okay, this has been the same mission. But I find Assassin's Creed's kind of similar. The one game.
The first one. The first one is. Because it's basically get to the new city and then eavesdrop, pickpocket, and whatever. Yeah. And then once you do that
Sit on a bench and go assassin.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the later Assassin's Creed's really improved that structure. Okay. Because they
I like the shit one that I played, just smashing the shit out of other ships.
Yeah, sure.
When you were watching me play that, you were laughing your head off because I just kept ramming into them.
I was.
That was fun.
I enjoyed watching that. Anyway, I also finished Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, finally, which you now have.
I do. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. I didn't bring that up to... bring that up anyway.
I'm about to thank you of my own accord.
You are, but I didn't want to make it seem like I was doing it on purpose so that you would.
Fishing for gratitude.
Exactly. I was not doing that.
I don't think you're one of those crap people.
Good. So I enjoyed Phoenix Wright, and I actually started playing the second game now because I have the trilogy on iPhone, and I've played very little of it, but I like it, but I don't like how the music changes because I'm an idiot. Okay. It's the same graphics for the most part. Like you can tell that the animation has gotten slightly better, but it's basically the same thing. I'm like, I miss the old courtroom theme. I miss the old theme for this character, which sounds slightly different now and crappier.
Sometimes change is a good thing.
I suppose it is. Anyway.
But not always.
Yeah. So I did that. And speaking of, games where you have to investigate things, I also played a game which you also played some of, which was called Contradiction Spot the Liar, an FMV experience made by whatever. You know what gets me about that game?
What would you say if I went like
this? You know what I love about that game is that it has like three different titles and they're all a paragraph long. Did you notice that?
No.
Oh. Well, the main thing is Contradiction Spot the Liar, which, okay, is not a paragraph long, whatever, I exaggerated. But the icon in Windows is like, Contradiction of an FMV adventure or something like that, or like, Contradiction Spot the Liar, an FMV adventure. Like, okay, we get it, yes.
Mm.
Anyway.
See, I only know this because I honestly would have had no interest in this game except a friend was playing it and just relying on the hint button to make progress. I was like, geez, solve the puzzle. So he instructed me to take over, and I played 30 to 40 minutes of it and just went, oh.
I had no interest in this game because, as you well know, I am fairly averse to FMV games. But a certain person who shall remain nameless, but she knows damn well who she is, and when she listens to this... when she listens to this, she's going to go, hey, and make a face.
Good.
But she was like, hey, we should play Contradiction Spot the Liar. You'll love it. And I'm like, I'm really not going to love it. I hate FMV games. And she was like, oh, you just say you hate FMV games. And I was like, no, I really hate FMV games.
Here's the thing. I'd enjoy FMV games if the average FMV game was decent.
Yeah.
But the average FMV game, in my experience, is just woeful.
Well, this was very much an average FMV game. I mean, it was very pretty because as it's been well known, like a cinematographer was obviously, hired or
it was well shot.
It was very well shot. And I
kind like of the found, coloring and stuff is good.
Yeah. The blue filter is nice.
Here's the thing. The this night is for what frustrated me, and I know you found the same thing, is that the whole idea is to find contradictions in what people say. So, you know, he says that he doesn't know much about plants, but he's, you know, studied plant at university. So, you know, you go, oh, that's a contradiction. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, here's the thing. And those clues lead you to find more evidence or more clues. But at some points, there's two very obvious contradictions and the game does not recognize them.
Yeah, that happened a few times. The other thing that I kind of got bothered about was the fact that you can't ask anybody about any of the objects you pick up, and yet they still appear in your list of stuff to ask about, just with the caption, oh, so-and-so wouldn't know anything about this, yeah. or whatever. And it gets to the point where towards the end of the game, you have such a huge list of things, and many of the things have like four or five different facts that you have to comb through in order to make the contradictions, that it just becomes this overwhelming amount of information that you have to sift through in order to get to the right conclusion. And yeah, like you say, that opens up the possibility for what seem like obvious contradictions that the game doesn't recognize.
Well, when I say seem like these are blatantly,
well, yeah,
of like they're right next to each other. You click the two,
yeah,
and nothing happens, and you just go, but I only played a bit. Yeah. Then we had to go out to dinner, for which I was grateful.
What did you think of the UI design, out of curiosity?
I mean, I thought it handled what the game was trying to do pretty well.
I thought it was kind of strange. I thought it looked like a hidden object game style, just weird kind menu of, thing.
But it's an FMV game. I don't expect too much from it.
I guess. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, the acting was terrible as usual, though. The main character was super, super over
yes,
the top.
He had very intense eyes.
He did. He really did. Mm. And his hat was
dumb.
And
the characters
it bothered
just
me.
Awful.
Yeah, the characters were dumb. Yeah. The thing that I don't like about games like that is like, or stories like that, and I know it's kind of the core mechanic of the whole game, but I just think it's really stupid and unbelievable in a detective game like that, where you catch someone in a lie, and they just kind of go, oh, okay, fine, well, here's what else, here's the real truth, and it's like, he just takes that at face value, you know? Like,
yeah, they reward you for... Yeah.
Yeah, like if someone's lying to you in real life and you catch them in a lie, they're probably not going to like break down and tell you the truth and then just business is normal, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've thought about this a lot in designing my own detective game and like it's fun to catch someone in a lie, but when you catch them in a lie, it should be more, I don't know. It shouldn't just be like, "Well, you said this." But then you also said that, like, it makes more sense if you present, like, a piece of evidence or something. Like, you said you weren't here this time of day, but what about this picture? And they'll be like, oh, well, bye! And then they run away.
Yeah, or, you know, yeah, anything but just carry
just
on.
Anything but just like, oh, you got me. Well, let's keep on going with our conversation. Yeah.
Here's the next clue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I played another FMV game.
You did?
Mm.
Tell me about it.
It's called The Bunker.
Really?
Mm. Are you familiar?
I am.
With the slang word bunk?
I am in certain contexts, so I don't know if it means the same as what you mean, but I generally think that...
Let's just say
it's
that
a bunch of bunk.
Not debunk the fact that
what
most
are you,
FMV games are terrible.
What are you, Gene Shalit?
Here's the thing. I get what the bunker was going for, and it must have taken a lot of work to pull off.
Okay.
It was not for me at all. I hated it. I didn't hate this game. But it was very hard for me to find any semblance of value in my 2 hours with it.
Wow. Is that how long it took you to play? Is that really just the full, like, can you finish this game in 2 hours?
I'm guessing it's 2 hours. It was not long. You don't do anything. Like, you just follow the thing and then you watch the shit acting and then you follow the thing again. There's one decent puzzle and then there's, you know.
Wow. So it's like a walking simulator FMV game.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I get what they were going for, you know, and they had some nice ideas, but it's such an unfortunate way to present what could have been, you know, there's no challenge.
Hmm.
There's no, you know, the story. I get what they were trying to do. And, you know, the main actor obviously worked very hard to try and play his role, and he drools and stuff, and I was like, okay, he's committed, he's drooling all over himself.
Sure.
But I didn't like The Bunker at all.
I'm sorry.
FMV games aren't my thing, so I guess I was kind of biased going in.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have the same bias, so don't feel too bad.
Yeah, and you know, I've never played a Tex Murphy or anything like that, so
yeah,
I've sort of, you know, I can't speak too badly of them, but oh, I didn't like the bunker at all. I was glad when it was over. I was like, and I sort of said, I said to the people that were there, like, we're actually going to watch American Psycho, but they needed to do an update of their thingy that does their TV.
Excuse me.
So I was like, all right, while that's updating, I wasn't going to do it, but for, while that's doing it, I'm pretty sure I'm close to the end, so I'm just going to finish this thing so that
dear.
I can not think about it. Like, that's, I just like, all right, I got nothing better to do, I'll finish it. That's how I was about the bunker. And it's a 2-hour game, so, you know.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
Yeah. Well.
You know what? You know what is an interesting game? It's Able Black, which I played on my phone on the plane coming back home from Melbourne.
Able Black? I haven't heard of that one.
Hmm. I liked it.
Okay. What is it?
It's hard to describe, but it's science fiction and it's kind of very far future. And you play as an android and you sort of, there's, you know, it follows the story of an android trying to figure out various things. And then you get subjected to basically personality quizzes and sort of logic tests. So you have to solve those. It's only an hour long. You know, I finished it pretty quickly, but I enjoyed it.
Okay. You never finished The Night of the Rabbit, did you?
No, not yet.
I was just thinking about that earlier today.
Excuse me. Yeah, I thought about playing some when I was over in Melbourne, but then I played Doom and the Bunker instead.
Wow.
I played some of the new Doom.
Oh, the new Doom, right.
Yeah, I played about half of it, I think.
And how'd you find it?
I liked it.
No, good.
Yeah, I liked it well enough. You know, it's pretty doomy. It's pretty, you know, there's a lot different to Doom.
Uh-huh.
But I still enjoyed it quite a bit. It looks great, but it looks great on a PC that costs more than my car. So, you know, no, the PC doesn't cost more than my car. What I'm getting is a very expensive PC. So, you know, and it was like a screen. I forget how wide this screen was, but it was one of those ones that's so wide that it curves around.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it was, I was like, and he's running 2 graphic cards in SLI and all this stuff. And,
wow.
You know, so everything looked amazing. And he's got a mouse that looks like the Terminator.
Oh, yeah.
Had a baby with the new Batmobile.
Yeah, like, I've seen that mouse. Jesus. I mean, I don't know if I've seen that specific mouse, but I don't remember if I saw his mouse when we were over the last week. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I played it and I was like, this is pretty good. You know, I can see why people like it a lot. I liked it and, you know, it's got the sort of circle strafing kind of, you know, very reliant on sort of movement and speed and sort of thing. And yeah, so I was like, this is pretty good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I liked what they did.
Good.
You know, considering I've been playing stuff like Battlefield 3 and stuff like that, it's a nice change.
Yeah.
Good. I'd like to finish the whole game someday. You know, I just obviously wasn't going to play through an entire game while just staying at someone's house. Be like, hey, let me use your computer.
Well,
but,
yeah.
You know, he'd only played, like, the first level or so. So he was interested to see. He was like, oh, please play through it. I just want to watch. I was like, okay.
Oh, baby.
Not well, a little bit like that, but
yeah.
Not really.
Anyway, anything else?
Yes.
How did I know that answer?
I played Tom Clancy's Hawks.
Oh, right, Tom Clancy.
This is a weird thing, right? Because last time I mentioned that I'd played Blazing Angels 2, Secret Weapons, Secret Missions.
Yes.
Of World War II. I'm thinking Secret Weapons of World War II, which was a Battlefield 1942 expansion.
Never mind.
Sorry.
And I was thinking of an obscure LucasArts game that many people have not played.
I see. I think I know just from the word secret.
What?
Is it Secret of Monkey Island?
No, Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe.
Oh, right. I know Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe.
Yeah, but have you played it?
I haven't played it, but I think I have it in the box somewhere.
Yeah, well, see, no one's played it. Or not many
people have played it.
Yeah, anyway, please continue.
Anyway, so I found out that the next game that they made after Blazing Angels 2 was Tom Clancy's Hawks. Now, I had no interest in Tom Clancy's Hawks at all. I saw it and I was like, oh, it'll be some dumb voice command thing because that's what they were doing for a while.
You know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know what? I'm just imagining a game called Tom Clancy's Hawks is you load it up and it's just Tom Clancy sitting in a dark room and he's got two falcons on either arm. And he's just like, these are my hawks. This is Javelin and this is Mordecai. And now we will go falconing. And then they just go and hunt for squirrels in the woods.
They're making that game for PlayStation 4 for VR.
I would play that game. Yeah, I would play that game. Anyway, please continue.
No, seriously, they're making some game where you fly an eagle or something for PS4.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
It's VR. Everyone will just what can we do? But yeah, so
I don't know.
Tom Clancy's Hawks is literally the same thing, but in like a near future setting.
Okay.
It's the same sort of game. It's an arcadey flight game, and you do the missions, and you blow the bad guys up, and it's awesome, and you've got basically unlimited ammo. It makes no sense, but it's a blast to play. So I beat that. It's interesting because, you know, it starts off as, like, you know, near future political situations, and then it ends very quickly in America's the best!
Oh, boy.
So, you know, which brings me to Homefront.
Oh, right.
Which I just finished tonight.
Yeah.
Which was kind of fun because, I mean, they put you in a sort of scenario where North Korea has invaded the US.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're basically... It's interesting because, you know that scene in Children of Men where they're on the bus and there's all the people lined up and it's all awful?
Yes.
They basically steal that scene directly for the very start of the game. So I was like, oh, that's fun. That's a bit stolen from Children of Men. And then the second mission, there's a bit that I'm like, oh, that's fun. That's a bit stolen from Enemy at the Gates and so on and so on. I was like, each one of these missions, I think in the third mission, they lift, I think, if not steal. I don't know the game very well, but if I'm right, they steal from Spec Ops The Line and, like, you know...
Oh.
They're just like quoting somber moments in war media to like make their point, you know. But there's the last mission made me laugh because, you know, you saw these American soldiers and you fight these people, you fight those people, you fight the North Korean soldiers, then you fight the American redneck sort of stronghold, and then you take the helicopter. But the very last mission made me laugh out loud because you've done all the stuff and then, like, you're going to retake the Golden Gate Bridge from the North Koreans because, you know, the symbol of America.
Sure.
You got to end on the thing. So you get in the helicopter with your grenade launcher, and as you're taking off, the guy's like, I hope y'all don't mind music. And he puts on, like, 70s rock and roll as you're taking off. As you're flying towards the Golden Gate Bridge in the sunset, I'm like, oh, my God, really? And then a missile comes out of nowhere and just smashes the hell out of the helicopter next to you, and like they go down, and all of a sudden, like the music stops, and it's all chaos. And I'm like, ha, take that, American dream. But then, of course, you know, you go on and be the great American hero. So I was like, oh, that's kind of, I was kind of disappointed because the story that they told, they could have told in any number of real world countries and made it exactly the same. But of course, they wanted to make Americans look like the victims because that's the narratives that we buy into the most. So, yeah. I was a little disappointed there. I'm like, oh, there's so many real-life war scenarios we could have shown this, people being, you know, prisoners of war and the sort of becoming sort of, you know,
yeah,
part of the homeland security. I don't know. I was like, oh, this could have been done differently. But that's true of any game.
Yep.
I think that's all the games I want to talk about for now.
Good.
Before people go to, well, I mean, they're probably already asleep.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's not even all of them, honestly.
Well, but I mean,
I'd be here forever.
You would.
So. I finished 63 games this year.
Yes. Finished.
I think my most before.
Oh, Oh, I forgot to talk about King's Quest.
Oh, yeah.
I finished King's Quest because in the interim between podcasts, two episodes came out.
Gosh, that's a long time.
That is, well, not really. The last two episodes were a month apart, which was bizarre.
It was really quiet.
It was super quiet. Yeah, so I finished King's Quest. I played the fourth chapter, and then the fifth chapter came out less than a month later. And again, I reinstalled them for reasons, and they deleted my save games, so I had to. I didn't have to.
Oh.
But since there is a bit of, you know, choice continuity that goes through the series, I decided to play them from the beginning again, because, I mean, they're not that long. So I spent.
Right, and you knew what to do.
And I knew what to do. So I spent the entire. Actually, I had to think about for the first episode, because it had been so long since I had played it, I had to remember how to do certain things. And that's like the longest one. So I started playing the first episode on like the evening that the last one came out. And then I finished the entire series the following day. So I spent pretty much a whole day playing King's Quest. And I have to say, as a whole, playing it as one giant game, I think it was a more rewarding experience because there were certain plot threads and like jokes and running gags and stuff that you may have forgotten from episode to episode, and they made a lot more sense just playing them one right after the other. Now,
well, I mean, that's the same with Dreamfall Chapters from The Longest Journey in 99.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Jesus. I know. I mean, oh, wait, did I talk about how I finished Dreamfall Chapters?
Didn't you talk about that last time?
I don't think I did.
When did you finish it?
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, no, I don't think you have talked about it. No, you can't have done. Oh, no. Maybe. I don't know.
I didn't, because I think I finished it in, like, October, and we last podcasted in September. Okay. I don't know. Well, anyway, I'll just give a brief rundown. So, Dreamfall Chapters, yeah, finished it. I didn't really like it. I thought it was very underwhelming. I thought that...
That's a shame.
It is a shame. I thought that, obviously they built up all this stuff. Like, if the game had focused on just kind of resolving all the plot threads that they had already established in Dreamfall and The Longest Journey, or at least just in Dreamfall...
Which, face it, there were plenty of things to tie up.
There were plenty of things to tie up, and they really only tried tying them up in the fifth chapter.
Oh, God.
And while it's true that they, really did tie up a lot of the stuff in Dreamfall, it just felt like it was all plastered together at the end. And the problem with that is that in the early chapters of Dreamfall, you haven't played any of it, have you?
Not Dreamfall Chapters, no. Okay. I own it. I got it for free.
Oh, that's right, you did. So there's this whole section in the first game where you're Zoe and you're in Europolis and you're like, in this whole political struggle between these two, well, not political struggle, but you're volunteering for a campaign and there's this whole backstory and thing in the background of these two political parties and this election and stuff. And you're like, whatever. And it's interesting, but it doesn't go anywhere. It's completely dropped and abandoned. It doesn't mean anything. It's revealed in the fifth chapter that like none of it mattered and none of the choices really matter. And like most episodic games where choice is involved, that, you know, that happens. I mean, the story ends the same way no matter what. And there's actually bits, like there's one character that shows up in the fifth chapter who's been in the interludes all along. And there's literally an exchange where it's like, she just appears out of nowhere and she's like the deus ex machina. And one character says to her, how do you know all this stuff? And she goes, that's just how the story is written. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Really?
Is it Reza will remember that?
No, Reza is I just completely unimportant too. Anyway, I thought it was ridiculously plowed together. Like you could tell that Ragnar Tornquist wanted to tell this big epic story, and kudos to him for being able to actually be able to do it over all these years.
Yeah, over like 15 years.
Yeah. But it was crazy. Just like, oh my god. And I actually had a pretty good memory of the previous games, but anybody who doesn't really remember the other games or who hasn't played the other games is going to be completely lost and not understand what was going on.
Dave was telling us stuff when we were there, and he was like, I don't remember that character. I'm like, dude, he was in.
Yeah.
Do you not without spoiling anything?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I asked him. I was like,
I remember that guy. He was a major character.
Yeah, and he was telling me, he's like, oh yeah, they like reveal who this is, and I'm like, oh, it's so and so, isn't it? Because I had an inkling because it was super telegraphed. Yeah. I felt, and he's like, yeah, how did you know that? I'm like, because he was a big character. He's like, oh, I didn't remember him. And I'm like, are you curious? That
specific cutscene.
Yeah. And so, Anyway. So, yeah, that was King's Quest chapters. Well, I said that I was going to replay Longest Journey and then Dreamfall and then Dreamfall chapters in one go just to get the whole story, but I don't think I'm going to do that now because
Dreamfall chapters. Session.
Yeah, that's what you said the last time I mentioned this. But I just found Dreamfall chapters so disappointing that I don't even think I'm going to bother to get it on PS4 whenever it comes out on PS4. Unless it's like super cheap. To get that. Maybe if it's super cheap, I'll get it.
Okay.
Anyway, so King's Quest. So King's Quest, on the other hand, I know that a lot of people were disappointed with it, and I can understand why, and it definitely had its ups and downs. Like, I definitely felt that the even-numbered chapters were weaker, and the odd chapter numbers were stronger.
That's basically the opposite of the original series, in which 4 and 6 are probably your favorites.
There you go. Well, yeah. Mm. But yeah, the first episode was good. The second episode was eh. Although playing it again, I appreciated it a little bit more. The third episode was good too. The fourth episode... So the fourth episode suffered from that thing where, you know, you make fun of something and then you do it and it's not funny. So they did that. They did that with sliding tile puzzles and mazes. And it's the story is that it's between, like, it starts off with Alexander getting kidnapped, and then he shows up 18 years later, and then they decide to go on a family vacation to sort of get together with the family. So they go to, and to be fair, I thought it was, like, how they handled the whole backstory within this particular series of games was done well, because they go back to where Graham and Valenice meet, and it varies depending on which Valenice you pick in the third chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's just a cosmetic change because it means you're either like while you're walking there, because it's an ice fortress either way, but either when you're walking there, it's either a forest or a tropical island.
Oh, that's sweet.
Which is kind of cool. Like, they put a lot of attention to detail in that sort of thing. But then when you get there, it's like, okay, so this Sphinx is telling you about this labyrinth. And then so Graham and Alexander are basically at odds with each other on how to solve puzzles and stuff. So, like, it literally starts off in an escape the room, which is then the final puzzle. But then you basically have to go through all these single rooms where you have to solve the puzzles by either sliding tiles or just figuring out the paths or whatever.
So it's more like a puzzle game than an adventure game.
It's totally like a puzzle game, yeah. And Alexander at one point, even because they portray him as like an angsty teenager who for some reason talks in like modern meme speak. and so like he's like, ugh, are we really bonding over a sliding tile puzzle? Really? And like, there's a couple of bits where he uses his magic to like just solve the puzzle by throwing a fireball at it. And Graham's like, "That's not how we do things." And like, it's this weird emphasis on Graham really liking puzzles, which is kind of strange. I don't know, but anyway, yeah. So yeah, it's the fourth episode was kind of weak, but as far as like gameplay, story wise, it was all right. And it was interesting too, because like, I know story-wise a lot of people, and this just dawned on me the other day, like a lot of people were sort of put off by the fact that like it retcons, or they say it retcons the original King's Quest games, because I mean, you've played enough to know that at the end of King's Quest 3, there's a dragon that you have to defeat that Rosella is going to be sacrificed to, right? So they kind of, they just completely throw that out, and it's basically just depicted as, okay, 18 years later, Graham and Valenice and Rosella are hanging around the throne room and they have a staring contest, and then Alexander just shows up. Right. So,
that's preposterous.
Yeah, but here's the thing. So at the beginning of the second episode, or sorry, the third episode, when Graham is about to tell the story of how he met Valenice, his granddaughter's like, oh, everybody knows this story. Like, you went in the tower and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yes, well, a lot of times stories have a way of just, like, the fairy tales always, you know, they leave out the truth and they just kind of romanticize it or whatever. But it felt to me like, it occurred to me that, like, okay, so this is, he's telling the story to his granddaughter about how this happened. I really don't think that he's going to tell his granddaughter that, like, he had to sacrifice her aunt to a dragon. So it feels like he's just sugarcoating the story and omitting that bit. And it makes sense.
That's a good point.
It makes sense
he's
in the narrative.
Narrator.
He's an unreliable narrator. And they actually play up this fact in the fifth game where he's telling the story and, like, it Assassin's Creed's a little bit where, like, you walk through certain backgrounds and there's parts missing. And he's like, no, that's not right. Oh, I can't. Oh, because he's an old man in the fifth one. Right. So, yeah, so he's just, like, walking around and, like, and then he gets to a point and he's trying to, his memories get all jumbled up and, like, he's trying to remember who's who and, like, there's a character that shows up that he was like, oh, this guy was here all along, but I just left him out because whatever. And there's actually a line that I missed, too, in the, at the end of the second one where he's like, yeah, so that's the story of that and I left out parts that I wasn't fond of and some of the details may have changed over the years, but overall the point remains. So I was like, okay, so he's obviously leaving out the parts he doesn't like, so he's not telling the part about the dragon and everything. So, yeah. Anyway.
That's cool.
I cried at the end because it struck a chord with me as far as, like, personally. I mean, I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't played, but there's a pretty... I mean, you kind of know what's coming, and it happens at the end. And I was like, oh, I've experienced this before, as most people probably have. And, yeah, so, you know, it made me a little sad, and I had to sort of deal with my grief a little bit afterwards. But overall, it was a good experience, and I'm curious to see what they do with the epilogue, because they wrapped up the story pretty nicely.
It's cool that they managed to make a new King's Quest that everyone didn't hate. People seem to like it a fair bit.
I think there's a lot of the heart... Well, it might just be the quote-unquote echo chamber.
I think it's... Dude, because when I read, like, reviews of stuff about it, a lot of people are positive.
Yeah. But the Echo Chamber is the one that feels betrayed and thinks that it's an insult to the
original
games
and all
that crap.
Dude,
but
they
just
want King's Quest VI again.
That's true. There's actually... are you planning on playing it?
Dude, I haven't finished the original King's Quest games yet.
Okay, well, there's a bit towards the end that I don't want to spoil here on the podcast, but I really want to tell you about because it's so ridiculous. I think you'll appreciate it.
Okay, well, we got time.
Anyway,
we
do. But
speaking of, you mentioned something about a line that you missed. You know a line that I've missed in Full Throttle and finally was like, oh, the other day when I downloaded it up and, like, played the first little bit of it?
What's that?
When you come out of the dumpster at the kickstand and you go and look at your bike, he says, some joker took my keys. And I'm like, oh, Mark Hamill, of course.
I never thought about that, actually.
And then I was like, oh, that's cool, it's the Joker, it's Mark Hamill. And Dan was like, no, Batman Animated Series didn't start then. I looked it up, it did. It was 1992.
Oh, okay.
So he was wrong.
That's cool.
Because I was like,
that's
gotta be an in-joke. That's gotta be. But yeah, I never noticed that.
That's funny.
You know, I know that bit, I've played that bit multiple times, but I'm like, some Joker, Mark Hamill, that's clever, I like it.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, continue.
Oh, no, I was done.
Oh, good.
I was done. So I think that's it for me. So
it's
that's
been a
it
pretty
for...
long podcast.
It has. We should probably wrap it up. All right. And I have to pee. I've had to pee for like the past hour. So...
Wow. And I can't talk. So
yeah, exactly. So we're the best podcast hosts ever.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at Grunislav Games.
And I'm at Ben_304.
And together we are
at BCT_podcast.
This is the worst.
I don't know. No, dude, this isn't the worst.
You're right, it's not. That was episode 36. Anyway, bye!
Bye!